What this network needs, this network gets. I promise you that.
The Blind Tag, Turnbuckle Throwbacks, WLW Studios Midnight Jury and After Midnight, Inconclusive Breakdown, Neckbreaker, Thursday Night Destruction, Two and a Half Wrestlers featuring the Pat Buck Show and the Bro Show, and the Shining Wizards. These are the shows of the Shining Wizards Network. ShiningWizardsNetwork.com. Entertainment here.
The one place where news, opinions, and entertainment are the way you like it. This is Rant EM Radio.
Symbol of excellence in sports entertainment.
The Shining Wizards Network proudly presents the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast with your hosts, the Impact Playa, Phil Rea, and Dave Mega Powers.
Giving you Hep C.
Konnichiwa, bitches. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, everybody in between, we are your recognized symbol of excellence in sports entertainment broadcasting. From the current to the way back, we are the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast. As always, your gracious host, your blue-collar scholar, the Impact Player, Mr. Phil Ray, and joining me tonight in studio...
the Mega Powers.
Konnichiwa. We are live, David.
We're live.
We're live on Rant EM Radio, Rant Entertainment Media, on your Roku. Tune in, your sister's Xbox, fucking PlayStation, everywhere else.
The can with the string.
That's right, the can with the string. All that happy horse shit. We are live. Sorry we're doing a little late tonight. We had Sonny Ono calling in the Decca Dome tonight, and I must say, it was fantastical.
Oh my god, it was so fun.
I think I saw Scott in there, right? Right? Was Scott in there before, Kid Human?
Scott!
Alright. Anyway, we are live. Thank you everybody for waiting for us. Because, again, we didn't expect Sonny Ono to talk that long, and he did. And we got some good shit out of him.
Yeah, we did. We got some amazing stuff. We got some of the listener questions in, too. So
yeah, we always try to do that. And I want to thank you for your due diligence, because I had given up on hosts.
But
let's not fool ourselves. Dave actually made this connection with Sonny Ono about a little over a year ago.
Yeah, but he doesn't remember
Remember you. You gave him a card at Legends. You're like, oh, yeah, you know, hook us up. And then Dave found him on Facebook and...
the rest is wrestling history.
The rest is wrestling history. Sonny Ono has a good story. He's going to tell you his story in length. We did get our questions in, so it wasn't like a Scotty Riggs type of thing with the Wizards.
No.
That was an Orr Bowles Mahoney thing from the other night.
Yeah.
By the way, thank you to Shining Wizards, Eddie, for having me on. That was good stuff. Guys, go to ShiningWizardsNetwork.com. Check all that shit out. However... tonight's not about them. It's about us tonight. And I have no news, really. Nothing really tickled my tits
except for some of the NXT guys crotch chopping in posing in front of TNA headquarters today in Nashville.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Yeah, apparently Finn Balor, they're in Nashville NXT doing some kind of taping, and they have a picture of Twitter of Finn Balor doing the crotch chop in front of TNA headquarters. And then Grotto went and did, you know, if you guys don't know who Grotto is, he's from the UK. And Grotto did something like that, too, in front of WWE. Like, some, like, and it's pretty, you know, kind of, you know, kind of cheesy. Wasn't my cup of tea. I didn't agree with it. I got a lot of buzz on the interwebs. Yes, Ted Turner. North Korea was talked about. It's a long interview, but nonetheless, it's worth it. Like I said, I have no news. We're going to play the interview. I'm going to feed Dave some sausage and peppers. Anything else you want to get in before our throwback?
No, let's play the interview.
All right. So
the time for talking is over, Phil.
Time for talking
is... time for us to stop talking and play this interview.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are the Turnbuckle Throwbacks, and this is Mr. Sonny Ono. We hope you all enjoy it.
Hey, this is Innovative Selfie, Sonny Ono, on Turnbuckle Throwbacks, and it's the best information on professional wrestling.
You know, we talk quite a bit about, you know, Japanese professional wrestling on here, some pro wrest. And, you know, this is the man who is the manager of champions, the manager of the elite of Japanese wrestlers, specifically from New Japan Pro Wrestling. He's also the innovator of the selfie.
Yes, the innovator of selfies.
Innovator of the selfie. He was the first. And also the man with the best rendition of Purple Rain outside of Prince.
Yeah.
We got
you guys really watch a lot of WCW shows.
Yeah, we do. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Sonny Ono joins us on the show tonight.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Yes.
Like, as far as selfie goes, there might have been other people doing selfie prior to 1974, 1975. but I'm going to tell you, you know, I'm the guy who was in 1990, '94 and '95, you know, I'm the guy who was on television week in and week out, was doing a selfie every time we made an entrance. So, and I have a picture to prove that. So.
Yes, we have plenty of pictures. Yes, absolutely.
They're all over the internet.
They're all over the internet, which makes us giddy, because we mention you at least a couple times a month during our babbling about WCW. And we have a lot of friends and peers that do other shows that are definitely in WCW, and they're very excited that you're on with us tonight. So we want to thank you for taking the time out of your busy schedule to talk to us.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's always an honor to the people still remember me from back in the days. Mm.
So, Dave, this is all you, man. Take it home.
All right. So, let's start from the very beginning. You know, quite a few of us know about your martial arts background, and you know, that kind of led you to meeting Eric Bischoff, which, you know, fatefully brought us, you know, brought you on television for all of us to see. So how did you, talk a little bit about your martial arts background and how you got to end up meeting, you know, Eric Bischoff?
Well, you know, I know Eric for over 4 years. We were a young man who was traveling around going to a karate tournament. Eric was a collegiate wrestler who injured his knee and couldn't really participate anymore in wrestling. So he's a very competitive person like I am. And you know, one of the things that he found to fulfill his competitive needs were going to a karate tournaments. And he was managing a karate school in Bloomington, Minnesota, and which is not very far from here. Mm. And I used to go up there and train. I'm in Iowa, there in Minnesota, and used to go up there and train. And that's how we became friends, by traveling. Eric's a pretty tough guy, and you know, he liked to scrap. And back in the days, you know, he was and it's really funny because he was not to have any to be mistaken that I have any man crush on Eric, but you know, he was a model. He was actually a model, and also a karate guy. But he's actually pretty competitive. And And he'd been in more fights than he probably would like to, you know, people out there to know. But it was a wonderful way for us to pay $25-$30 on a weekend, travel 5-6 hours, go into a tournament in St. Louis or Omaha or Atlanta, Georgia, and be able to pay $25-$30 and be able to fight a bunch of people and not get arrested. So that was mostly Eric thinking. So we used to travel and we used to compete. We had to be real good friends, and consequently, later on, we've been in a couple of visits together prior to him getting into wrestling. And actually, he will tell you one of the reasons why he got into wrestling and to Vern Gagne and those guys was I had a game called Ninja Star Wars that we kind of created together. And he pitched to Vern to get it on national TV, and the rest is kind of history.
Nice. Actually, one of our listeners wanted to know more about the game. They wanted to know what the instructions yeah. were for the game. Do you remember?
Well, it was a low-tech, laser tag. What it was he had a vest and a goggle and a headband that was made out of, the stuff that the felt material that was the Velcro, and we had a weighted Velcro stars, ninja stars, and they were in different colors, mostly red and white, and we would throw this at each other. So, one of the things we always wanted to do when we were kids, throwing those ninjas, making up a ninja, something that looked like a dangerous star, ninja stars, and we'd throw at the walls and stuff. So we made it so that you could throw these at each other. And like I said, we created a storyline behind that, and various game behind that, how you can go out and capture, opponents, samurai sword and stuff like that. And like I said, it was really a low tech laser tag, actually, did pretty well. We probably still have a few left. We just didn't know. I mean, a lot about marketing and stuff like that. And Eric liked the idea. He pitched this to AWA up in Minneapolis to get it on television. So we shot commercials and matter of fact, Eric just told me the other day that they found the commercial and they're gonna be showing that on. I think one of his shows on WWE.
Oh, yeah, we need to see that.
Yeah, we need to see that. And he mentioned all that, actually, on his last interview.
Oh, really?
With JBL. Yeah, well, he mentioned the game thing and your relationship with him, and he also mentioned it in his book, too, which is very insightful.
Yeah.
Whoever hasn't read it. Because, again, Eric Bischoff was a huge cog in that whole scheme of the Attitude Era in terms of the Monday Night Wars and... No one really.
It was the biggest rating time. Certainly, more viewers watched professional wrestling during that period than any time in history. And the competition is good for everybody. I mean, if you look at it from perspective from the wrestlers, the workers, it was the best of the times. I mean, you had two companies, or for that matter, the people was at whether it was New Japan or. WWF at the time, you could actually go to, there was alternative. There was other companies that would hire you. So, people complain about this and that about Eric but end of the day, if you really look at the history, and now we can't, 15 years since the end of WCW, if you really look at the period, and going back 20 years, it was the best of the time because, back in the days, the way they paid the athlete, the wrestlers were different. You got a piece of the pie, and it depends on who you were in the hierarchy. How they split the money. Obviously, main event got more money than the guy who was, the guy who was,
mid card or
the show.
So.
And a guarantee contract wasn't even thought of till Eric introduced that to some of the guys, and that's how a lot of wrestlers got guaranteed money, which, you know, I don't know if that exists anymore. But, you know, he made millionaires out of a lot of wrestlers.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, there was a lot of stuff that was being done for, you know, for that time period that nobody else, you know, was doing. And, you know, one of the great things about WCW, you know, especially for people that weren't, you know, too caught up in the entertainment side, you know, more into the wrestling side, was they would bring over the international talent. And, you know, to my understanding, you know, Eric Bischoff brought you in to mend, you know, some relationships with New Japan.
Yeah, well, what happened was prior management, and unbeknownst to me, Eric calls me. Let me back up a little bit. Eric calls me one night, and I'm sure this is after he had six pack, and we're, you know, and I'm in a car business, so he calls me up and says, "Hey, I'm driving this black jet. It's great." So we're talking about cars, and all of a sudden he goes, "Hey, by the way, I'm going to Japan. Why don't you go with me?" So I said, "Oh, yeah, okay, I'll go with you." You know, I ran a health club karate studio at the time, so, you know, I was self-employed, so I could go. And I said, "Sure, you call me back. Let me know when we go." And you know, and I ended up going with him. Actually, you know, Eric's was talking to me about, because we, because of our martial arts background, we wanted to maybe do some kind of this is before UFC now,
yeah.
So, you know, maybe doing some kind of kickboxing match as from Japan, that kind of thing. We were going, he says, "Well, if we get an opportunity, let's talk to him about that." And that was the only reason I was really going.
Mm.
Well, mind you, I don't know anything about wrestling. So we go there, and we go to the New Japan office, and we have a meeting, and Taiga Hattori is there. He lives in New York. He's a Japanese guy. He was a referee for them, and also a gaijin or a foreigner agent for New Japan Pro Wrestling at the time, and I think he still is.
Yeah, he still is.
And so I'm just, you know, Eric said, "Well, don't say anything till, you know." So I'm just basically sitting there, not expecting to do anything, and Eric start by explaining. So you got to understand how the context is. In front of us, you got Choshu, you know, 280 pounds, 300 pounds, meanest looking guy, meanest Japanese looking guy you've ever seen.
Yeah.
And then you got Sakaguchi, who was a judo national champion, you know, 6'7", 300 plus pound. And you got Masa Saito, was, you know, 64 Olympian, you know, and they all look like they want to, like, kill us. I mean, there's not a faint of smile. I mean, there's nothing friendly about this meeting. So I'm looking at it going, like, wow, I wonder what Eric's company did to these people. And I'm just sitting there thinking, not expecting to speak whatsoever. And all of a sudden, Taiga Hattori starts introduces us, and he looks, Tiger looks at me and goes, "Okay, go ahead." Looks at me and says that, and I go, "Go ahead what?" Well, go ahead and interpret what Eric has to say. So I get thrown in a fire there, and Eric starts, now mind you, this is the first time I ever heard this. So I'm translating as Eric's word is coming out of his mouth, and basically he says he wants to apologize for last, you know, past business doing between New Japan and WCW. Prior manage has paid, you know, I can't remember the exact amount, but it was quite a bit of amount, you know, $400.5 million, something to that sort, had paid, you know, paid WCW as a talent exchange program to be able to use some of the American talent to come over here. And consequently, because of the scheduling or whatever, that never happened. So I'm looking at Eric thinking, oh, so your prior management just stole $500,000 out of these people.
Wow.
So no wonder they're not happy with us. So anyway, so Eric made the proposal to have him mend the relationship by offering the talent and making up for the, you know, the money that it paid us for the talent. And, you know, we got to rekindle that relationship. And one of the things that Masa Saito says, okay, this is great, and he says in Japanese, but, you know, always a problem with calling your office and trying to get talent. Who's going to be our contact person? And Eric, without a skipping a beat, he says, oh, that'll be Sonny. And I look at him like, and I'm translating at the same time. So I go, and I'm thinking to myself, well, I don't work for you. I mean, what's going on? So anyway, so after that, you know, it's kind of history, but relationship, there was a guy named Brad Ringens, who was an 84 Olympian, who worked for New Japan at the time. So between Brad Ringens and myself, and, you know, we started bringing the Japanese talent over, and as well as bringing our talent over there. And at that time, there was guys like Wild Pegasus, which is Chris Benoit, and Dean Malenko, Black Tiger, which is Eddie Guerrero. They were on the New Japan contract. So, you know, fast forward a couple years or a year down the line, Eric offered those guys to come and work for WCW guarantee contract with Blessing on New Japan, and so that New Japan can use them in Japan as well with our talent exchange program. So that's basically, you know, how the relationship grew. And of course, you know, Eric launching, you know, Monday Night Nitro, and Thunder, and, you know, going to sometimes 3 hours, or we're doing sometimes, you know, 8 hours of television a week. And so we needed talent. We needed wrestlers, you know. So the program worked out really well. It was a lot of smooth translation, of course. You know, I got, and when the Japanese talent started to come over, because we needed them to, you know, to fulfill those hours that we had, you know, and none of them spoke English, so, you know, that's, I mean, I done some, you know, like B movies before, and had done some television before, but, you know, so that's how I got into, you know, put in as it was a time as well, because that's when economy in Japan, this is before the burst of the bubble, so, you know, Japanese yen was really strong, and they were here buying up, building in San Francisco and, you know, resorts and golf courses. And so I played that character of Sonny Ono, who was, coming over here buying the talent. And so that's basically how the storyline worked. And, you know, that's how that character got developed.
Mm. Actually, before we jump into the Sonny Ono character, because I wanted to ask you about this because I was reading about it and I heard you talk about it in some other interviews. But I guess they had you like as a figurehead, kind of like representative of WCW for Collision in Korea. And I wanted to ask, yeah, how weird was it being in North Korea?
Well, you know, if you go to Sports Illustrated, actually Sports Illustrated just did a 15-year anniversary story about you know, our trip, pro wrestling diplomacy kind of thing. I think article came out in April of this year, as a 15-year anniversary kind of thing, and you know, I mean the Japanese embassy, you know, they want us to go in there, and they you know, flat out says, you know, do you understand that, you know, Japanese gets kidnapped by North Koreans,
yeah,
you know, we can't guarantee your safety there, you know, we're they see us as the enemies, and you know, for me, it was just look, it's a once in a lifetime opportunity, right? I mean, if I wanted to go, if you wanted to go to North Korea, we can't go.
Right.
Only way we can go is whether we become high government official diplomat,
or if he Dennis Rodman.
You know, or you get captured. That's about the only way you get to go there. So, you know, it was, and I'm glad I did it. Was I scared? Yeah, a little bit apprehensive, you know, but then I was there as this kind of like peace festival, you know, ping pong diplomacy with China back in 1960s with Nixon, that kind of thing, you know. And so I saw it as a, you know, like an opportunity, and when the opportunity presented itself, you know, I mean, I was going to with Muhammad Ali and Ric Flair, and so I, you know. You know what would they want with me anyway? I mean, so
exactly.
But it was just amazing trip. I mean, you know, I can go on and on and on about how amazing the first hand. You know, I mean, at that time there was famine going on in the country, and you know, flying into Pyongyang was like I said it actually in one of my interviews with Sports Illustrated. It was like flying into, you know, Klingon Empire. You know, everything was gray.
Yeah.
It was a skyscraper. But everything was gray. Nothing was painted. And later on, Mike Chernoy of CNN told us that, you know, a lot of those buildings, there's nothing in them. So,
yeah.
You know, so I didn't see that firsthand, but, you know, I can believe that, certainly. But, I mean, there's so many things. But, you know, I saw the... they were trying to get us to say things, doing our interviews and stuff, you know, and you know, obviously they consider the Japanese as their, you know, their historical enemies. So, you know, they would ask me, says, you know, don't you think, you know, Japan should pay for all the war crime and this and that? And I go, hey, man, I said, you know, I live in Iowa. I was born after the war. I, you know, don't know anything about it. You know, it's just kind of standard question that we use. And they did the same thing to Eric as well. But, you know, experience was just amazing. How many actually persons get to say that they've been there and you know, came back alive and safe and, you know.
And got to hang out with Muhammad Ali and Ric Flair?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I have a picture of Muhammad Ali punching me in the back of the head.
That's great.
While we're walking to, you know, I think we're coming back from one of the Rikidozans, who is a very famous Japanese wrestler who was from Korea. So we visited his tomb and on the way back, and I feel somebody, like, you know, I feel something in the back of my hand. I turn around, and Ali throwing jabs at the back of my head. So I turn around, and of course, you know, I was a kickboxer, but so, you know, we just kind of smiled, and I squared off with him, and so, you know, it's a great moment. I mean, where do you get to do that?
It's true.
Yeah, Muhammad Ali. Matter of fact, I have a signed watch that he gave me, and I got a picture of him standing over Sonny Liston, a famous picture, and he signed out, you know, a picture for me to Sonny. So, you know, I mean, you know, look, man, he's my hero, right? I mean, he's a lot of people's hero. And so I got to interact with him. And, you know, so I have nothing but, I mean, I really don't have any negative, you know, any negative memory of that time. I know a lot of the wrestlers, you know, the food, and because they weren't used to that stuff. But, you know, frankly, the opportunity and you know, that I got to be able to go there, and got to hang out with, you know, Muhammad Ali, and, you know, you can't beat it.
Not at all.
Not
incredible.
At all.
So, yeah, so was maybe you know, you move on from being these kind of you know, random kind of characters, you know, representatives for WCW, and they finally make you into a manager, which, you know, after, you know, knowing that, you know, you weren't into pro wrestling previously, and you, for me. You know, I've done some work in pro wrestling in the past, and, you know, not everybody kind of gets it, you know, gets their character down pat. And for somebody who wasn't into wrestling previously, you did, like, extremely well with this, with the Sonny Ono character.
Well, you know, it was pretty simple. It was, you know, it was a pretty easy character to develop, in the sense that Japanese had money at the time. They were buying a lot of stuff all over the United States. Matter of fact, we did a segment, I think we did a show called Hot Wild in Sturgis, and I think one of the segments we shot, I think a promo segment was I was a camera crew. I think it was Colonel Parker, myself, and we went to Colonel Parker being another manager, and he was you know who he was.
Oh yeah,
always waving hanky, and you know his gimmick was, and he was a heel manager as well. So he was trying to get me to buy Mount Rushmore. So we go to Mount Rushmore and shoot this outside of Mount Rushmore. I'm looking at the Mount Rushmore. If you can imagine this, Colonel Parker is talking to me, and as we're looking up the Mount Rushmore, Colonel Parker is telling me that I can put my head right next to the Lincoln. And as we're doing this, and people are walking by, tourists are walking by, and you know they hear us talking about. I said, okay, you know. So at one point, I said, okay, I'll buy it. I'll buy it. I want my face right there. Can we get rid of the guy with the big nose? You know, that kind of thing. I'm saying, right? So the lady walks up to us afterwards and goes, you can't buy Mount Rushmore. This is a national monument. And I tell her, stay in character. I said, no, I already bought my face right there. She gets really mad at me. So, but, you know, those are the fun times that we had. I mean, I had nothing but really a fond memories.
Yeah.
99.9% of the time. And like I said, I'm forever grateful that I got opportunity to do that. Guys like Bobby Heenan, Jimmy Hart, Masa Saito, those are the guys that helped me develop that character and you know, helped me with, you know, what my job as a manager was and is. I can't but thank him enough. Mean Gene Oakland was, you know, just an amazing person. You know, the guy can make you look like $1 million interviewing you, you know. So, and because of the time that we need to fill those television time, you know, we had amazing cruiserweights that usually started our second hour with. You know, I mean, you get amazing professional wrestling matches. You know, there was a lot of storyline at the beginning, you know, of the headliners with Hulk Hogan and Ric Flair and Sting and, you know, Lex Luger and you know, those guys. And obviously Goldberg that came on later. But, you know, those are the obviously the headliners, but, you know, for guys that could, you know, put together amazing wrestling matches, you know, the Perry Saturn and the Dean Malenkos and Eddie Guerrero's and Chris Benoit and Chris Jericho and those cruiserweight, you know, Ultimo Dragon, which is one of my favorite guys. You know, those guys fill that need. And, of course, you know, I had opportunity to bring in, you know, Akira Hokuto, Bo Nakano, you know, Chibusa Nagayo, which is, you know, amazing names in Josh Pro Wrestling. So, you know, I mean, I can look back now and say I was really blessed with the people I got to manage.
Yeah, you were part of something special, and I say this to our fan base a lot who are newer to the product or who are a lot younger than I am, that set WCW apart. And Dave and I spoke about this in length as well. That set WCW apart from everybody else at the time, even before the sort of competition really started to heat up. You know, the curtain jerk guys, the cruiserweights, all you guys set a precedent, I think, for what became the next wave, the next decade. You know what I'm saying? So you're part of something very special.
Yeah, no, I truly believe that. It was obviously the best time of pro wrestling to date. You know, the competition was great. You know, they were always trying to outdo each other, you know, for the entertainment, what the product they put on television. And, you know, I think WCW did something a little different than what they were doing over there in New York. You know, you take, you know, and then we got introduced to the luchadors, you know, from Rey Mysterio to Psicosis, you know, Parka, you know, all those guys that, you know, Damien.
Your boy Silver King.
Silver King. Yeah. I mean, those guys, you know, they would never had an opportunity if it wasn't for WCW. And the hybrid of wrestling, you know, being that the guy who can work in Japan, guy who can work in the United States, and guy who can work in Mexico was Ultimo Dragon. You know, he's probably, and even to this day, he still wrestles.
Yep. Yeah, he does.
He does clinic, and, you know, he's really an international wrestler. And mind you, he's the only person to ever hold WCW and WWE belt at the same time. He had 10 cruiserweight belts, and he held the belt, both belts at the same time.
Yeah, the J Crown. I believe he beat Great Sasuke after the big J Crown tournament, yep. and you were managing him then. And it's amazing, like, the list of guys that you manage, especially from Japan. And, you know, briefly mentioned, you know, we talk quite a bit about Japanese pro wrestling on our show, and you have like some of the best guys like Kaz Hayashi, Yuji Nagata, Mr. Blue Justice himself, Bull Nakano.
Well, you can't. Biggest, you know, icon in wrestling in Japan. Obviously, you know, we had all the New Japan talent during World War III. We had Jushin Thunder Liger. You had, Masa Saito. We had Muda. We had Chono. I mean, those guys are, you know, iconic in Japanese wrestling, and certainly, and some of those guys are certainly in our wrestling in the United States. I mean, the storyline of NWO Japan, that program for NWO Japan was so huge. And summer of 1998, I believe, they sold like $5 million worth of T-shirt over there.
Yeah, I bet.
Yeah, it's insane. I remember the whole storyline was it Chono. Switched over to NWO, and you know, obviously on Nitro, he turned on you. You know, you were announcing him as your latest acquisition, and I know in Japan they were trying. He was trying to get Muda over onto his side, and there was this just kind of like back and forth.
Basically, I brought Muda in to avenge, you know, my disgrace was what Chono did to me by joining NWO and double crossing me, and of course, you know, Muda turns on me, and thus creates their version of Nash and Hall, their version of that was Muda and Chono. They go to Japan and start taking over New Japan with the NWO Japan.
That was the best part.
Yeah, it was amazing business. Mm. I mean, great storyline, amazing business because, you know, basically basically what they created was what WCW created with NWO. So, amazing amount of business. It's the biggest business they have ever done, and probably since. It was the best of time for a lot of us.
Mm. Now, was it New Japan is starting to get on the upswing again, and they have like a show on the cable channel Access. Have you been watching it by chance?
Yeah, I get to see some of the clip here and there, but you know, I don't follow, obviously, I'm a real good friend with Yuji Nagata, the guy I managed here. Yuji's obviously been their champion. He's still with New Japan. Mm-hmm. He's one of the senior member now of New Japan, obviously. I think they got a great product. Their product right now, obviously, NWA is kind of, you know, doing their, you know, they're working as they have a working relationship with NWA. They're doing a little invasion angle, you know, company versus company kind of thing going on there. But all that stuff is good, you know. I mean, one of the fondest memories I have is when all those guys would come over, we would schedule them to do the Universal Studio Disney TV taping. And you know, one of the best times ever was when those guys would come over and you know, I mean, how cool was it that we get to do that? You know, spend a week at Disney or spend a week at Universal Studio and hang out with all your friends. So.
Exactly. Who's like your favorite person that you've managed? you know, during your time in WCW?
Well, you know, it's hard to say. You know, obviously, my long stint as far as the American wrestler goes, mm-hmm. you know, having Ernest Miller as, you know, you got to remember, being Ernest Miller's manager was really a little different deal because I wasn't his mouthpiece. I was more like his you know, sidekick, you know, sometimes a comedy sidekick. And I was, you know, I was a reason. And if you look at his record, you know, Ernest would do a job all the time, but he never lost his heat because, you know, it was me usually losing a match for him, you know, because my screw up. But Ernest is amazing entertainment that he produced. You know, you mentioned earlier what we got to do on Saturday Night TV taping, you know, seeing Purple Rain and Al Green, because we had a wrestler named Al Green. And we had a Prince Ikea, so, you know, that was kind of comedy take on that we got to do on Saturday night. A lot of those things that we got to do, you know. So Jimmy Hart at the time was running with Saturday Night booking, and you know, he would let us do that, you know. Ernest was to answer your question, Ernest Miller, you know, by far we got to do a lot of things. We got to do Cat Bowl commercial,
yes.
and that, you know, actually we got cease and desist order from you know, obviously Ty Bowl, Billy Blank, who, used to be my roommate during my karate days.
Wow.
Yeah, he was my roommate when we fought the German team and when we went to South Africa. But you know, so with karate and wrestling, I got to travel all over the place. Because I went to South Africa during apartheid, so. But anyway, that's a little segue there. But it's really funny. We got to do a lot of that. But if you look at, you know, I mean, it's been an honor to be able to manage Akira Hokuto, who is probably one of the most entertaining, one of the stiffest female wrestler that I have ever seen, and I am afraid of her. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean she will hurt you, and you know, I mean, I wouldn't mind taking her to any bar fight. I can tell you that.
Yeah.
you know, of course, she had a Bull Nakano. You know, so legendary Shigusa Nagayo. So
Crush,
you know, the female goes. You know, it's between Bull and obviously Akira Hokuto, who, by the way, is still WCW Women World Champion.
Still.
That's right, still. Yep.
And because that program where Medusa, who's right now is in Australia right now with Monster Truck, but, you know, she it was supposed to be a payoff where she was going to go to Japan and win the title there, but that never happened. So, you know, Akira Hokuto is and forever WCW Women's Champion.
Yes. And she recently had a successful breast cancer surgery.
Yeah, she had health scare recently.
Yeah, she just had operation just last week, and she's recovering, but she seems to be doing well. I saw a picture of her. Mm. And she's a one tough lady, so, you know, I wish full recovery for her.
Yeah, thoughts and prayers.
I think it's like a breast cancer week or something.
It's aware, the whole month.
Breast cancer awareness.
You do a whole month.
Yeah, but you know, as far as you know, between Yuji Nagata but if you have to say one person, probably Ultimo Dragon.
Mm.
You know, he's amazing, amazing talent, and he, like I said, he is truly an international, you know, wrestler who is famous anywhere.
Yeah, I would say probably, I think for most fans, like a lot of people probably associate you with Ernest the Cat Miller or, right, you know, Ultimo Dragon the most.
Yeah,
especially because Ultimo Dragon had all the belts and, you know, he had you wearing some of the belts too.
Yeah. Well, he used to hate it. He used to hate carrying all those 10 belts.
Oh my God, I could imagine.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was, you know, he had like 2 duffel bags full of belts.
And they were all from, I could imagine that could have been like a huge mess because they were all from like all these different companies.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
and I'm sure they all want their belts treated a certain way. And I know that right. I know the J Crown didn't last too long. I think he dropped the belts to Liger,
right.
And I think Liger was like the last champion, and then it, you know, they retired it. Do you know
right.
like what, do you know what was the by chance like what was the reason that they dispersed all the belts again or?
Well, I think it has to do with the fact that when Ultimate Dragon became under contract with WCW,
mm-hmm.
you know, I think scheduling would be very difficult because he was a pretty popular wrestler, and he was on weekly on our show, so I saw him every week, but I stay in touch with all those guys. If you remember Kaz Hayashi, you know, Shiryu, mm-hmm. he was, and you know, and now everybody knows what he looked like now, but you know, he had a mask when he first came over. And he was known as Shiryu. And first of all, we said no, the name doesn't work. One. He sounds too much like something else we call in the United States. and he was really against it. But, you know, he wasn't like Grace Suzuki. You know, you want Grace Suzuki to keep wearing his mask.
Yeah.
Trust me when I tell you that.
Oh, I bet.
That's a little big on him for me. But, you know, a guy like Ultimo Dragon and Kaz Hayashi is very handsome. Those are handsome guys.
Yeah.
So I don't think you regret the fact that we made him. Because, it means something, obviously, when a luchador or, you know, when a masked wrestler loses his mask, you know. And there was really no fanfare for Kaz Hayashi when we did it. As a matter of fact, he never wrestled with a mask. I don't think in WCW. So, we brought him in as a cruiserweight.
Mm.
So, he didn't want to do it, but I'm glad he did it. And you know, obviously, he's the booker now for Muda's group.
Oh, for Wrestle One.
Oh, for Wrestle One, yeah.
Yeah, from Wrestle One. Yeah. So
yeah, we're big Japan fans.
What was that? We briefly mentioned, Great Sasuke, and I know he's a big Bon Jovi fan. And we briefly touched on Purple Rain. Like, I don't know, this is like my favorite era of your.
He won't, Sonny. He won't stop talking about it.
Well, you know, it was really it was my idea. Saturday night TV taping. I can't remember. We were down south somewhere, maybe Alabama somewhere. And what was real funny was, you know, this and that, you know, Jimmy was great. Because, okay, what do you guys want to do? Well, what we got? We got Prince Ikea. Okay, so Ernest and I have Prince Ikea. I said, well, you know, you can always edit the stuff out if it doesn't work. But let me go out there and be a confused, you know, typical Japanese who doesn't quite get it. So, you know, so let me do this little gimmick where I'll go and getting all excited that, you know, we have a special guest tonight, Prince. And so I go in the ring and, you know, explain this to Ernest. And I said, you know, Kat, we have Prince, you know, Purple Rain. And so, you know, of course, we do my rendition of Purple Rain and you know, in comes Prince Ikea. And next week, we had a wrestler named Al Green, who happened to be a Caucasian person, who is nothing like Al Green, the preacher.
Right.
But of course, once again, you know, next week, I go in and I said, hey, I'm just really sorry, Mal. You know, confusing Prince Ikea and Prince. But listen, I got a special guest for you tonight, for sure, Al Green. You know, let's get together. You know, and so I do a rendition of that, and of course, Al Green, you know, a 350-pound, you know, hairy-chested, blonde-haired guy comes thundering in to actually wrestle. You know, so those were kind of funny moments that we got to do, and we wanted to continue that, but I think we got thrown into a lot more Monday Night Show shows, so we had to kind of suspend that. But one of the things that I think WCW, and I know why, I'm not blaming anybody, but even like the three counts, a lot of those young cruiserweight group got thrown in to Monday night, you know, as they were gaining, you know, gaining steam on a Saturday night show, a weekly show. But, you know, just about when they were just getting over, they would throw them in a Monday night show and, you know, and kind of get squashed, which I certainly understand, because we had a limited amount of talent. But
yeah.
I wish they would develop, they would do a little bit more development on that. But, well, like I said, you know, everybody, it was a great time for everybody. Look at all the exposure that we all got, you know.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, and people still talking about it. Like, I've been watching Nitros back-to-back on the network from 95 to, I think I'm up to 97 right now.
It's just a fun time to be a wrestling fan, and we spoke about that in length a few times on the show.
Yeah, and it's amazing that, I mean, for me, you know, being able to manage and having a you know, angle with Medusa, you know, and having, you know, Yuji Nagata, having Ernest Miller, Ultimo Dragon, and of course, you know, I got to manage, you know, Psychosis and you know, some of those luchadors as well. So, you know, I got to be on television a lot.
Yes.
I mean, you know, so, you know, if you see Monday Night Raw show, you know, from, you know, 75 to 2000, I'm on a lot of their shows.
Absolutely. Now, you know, was it 2000? You know, there was the racial discrimination case that you were involved in, and so you weren't a part of Nitro when it came to an end. So
no, I was already gone. Actually, you know, the funny thing is that I think it was September 1999. Mm-hmm. I just signed like 2-year deal, and it's real funny because right after that, I think they ousted Eric. There was actually a office coup among the vice president that went to, you know, the Turner Tower and got rid of Eric. And one of the bookkeeper, who I won't mention, but he's, you know, he that's when Vince Russo came in. And, you know, Eric was gone. Vince Russo came in and you know, rest is kind of history. You know, he got rid of all the Japanese wrestlers,
a lot of Hispanic,
all the Mexican wrestlers.
Yeah.
And when I say that, and he'll argue and say, well, we kept, you know, we kept Conan and we kept Rey Mysterio. Well, those guys are from San Diego. They're not from Mexico.
Exactly.
You know, so what I'm telling you is that he said he was going to get rid of them, and he did get rid of them. And that's that. You know, that's you can't say, you know, I'm in charge, I'm gonna get rid of a certain segment, and he can do it. I'm not saying he can't. You know, he can keep people off TV, but he can't say the thing he said and execute it and actually the you know, the company allowing them to do it. And that's basically, you know, what the big issue was.
Yeah.
You know, so, but look, you know, I am forever thankful the thing turned out the way it did, because, you know, my kids were, I think my oldest daughter was going into her junior year in high school, and I have 4 children altogether, and so I got to spend, you know, being back home and jump-starting my other businesses. And I got to spend a lot of my time, you know, enjoying my kids, you know, probably most important part time of their lives. So I got to get myself involved in a lot of their sports and stuff like that. And of course, I have one more left. You know, I have a youngest boy who's 19 now, who goes to Woodward College. Almost 2 years ago now, he'll be sophomore this year, but he won a state tournament in the state of Iowa, which is you know, we're this is the wrestling state here,
and
he went like 47 in all, never got taken down. This is proud dad talking. he won 126 pound 3A, which is a big school class, and you know, so I got the so So when you tell me that I've been out of wrestling, I just shifted gears and been managing my son's wrestling.
Managing Kaz Ono.
we're looking at it right now. Division III. The season now. The season's already started, or it's about to start, or.
Yeah, we're about a month away till NCAA to start. NCAA will start here in actually in about 28 days. Woodbridge College was runner-up last year. 4 years prior to that, they were national champions. So he's in a great place, great school, like I said, I'm blessed that I get to go see him wrestle. Woodbridge College in Iowa. So I get to go see him, and get to compete. So I get to, I do have urge to go out there with a chair sometime and hit a ref upside the head. But other than that,
Well, do you have an urge to take a selfie with your son before he gets to the ring?
Oh, I did that anyway.
Awesome. Very good.
Yeah. Well, now it's a popular thing. When they don't know you're the trendsetter. When these kids do it, they don't know. The mystique that is Sonny Ono, the king of the selfies.
That's right. Yeah, I was doing a selfie when they were disposable camera.
That's right, with the Polaroids. That's right.
I remember hearing you say, like, in an interview that WCW actually had a sponsorship with Fujifilm, right?
We had an opportunity to do a deal with the Fujifilm. They came to us and said, hey, we like this Sonny Ono guy and this Fuji camera how can we, get involved in that? Because there was only two cameras that you could go buy, at Walgreens and, Walmart's of the world. You buy the disposable, 35 millimeter camera, and it was Kodak or Fuji, And me being Japanese, obviously, I always use the Fuji camera. Mm-hmm. And they came to us, actually, with a deal, but I think we had something with, company had something to do with Kodak and couldn't make that happen. I don't know what the deal was. It was beyond my pay grade for figuring that out. But, like I said, it was just fun time. And who knew the selfie was going to be, become the big thing in, last 3 years. But I was doing it before it was cool, and I was doing it, really before anybody else on television.
Trendsetter. We need to get you some royalty checks.
Yeah, man.
Cool. Maybe you should look up selfie, on Wikipedia. Maybe you can somebody write that in.
That's it, yes. There you go.
I'll edit it tonight.
All right, Dave, you want to start wrapping this up soon?
Yeah. We got. Let's do a few more questions, and then we'll let you go for this evening.
All right.
Okay.
Like I mentioned from the start, we do have some fans who know about your history as a martial artist and as a B movie star, and we have one of our listeners who wanted to ask you about working on Fearless Tiger with Bolo.
Eric from Minnesota.
Yeah, our buddy Eric from Minnesota. He wants to know what was it like working on Fearless Tiger, especially with Bolo.
it was a Film One production. A lot of my karate friends back then. There was a model named Monica Chenier. She was 5 foot, 6 foot, 5 foot 11, 6 foot tall. She was a big time model actually, and she was getting into film. And Jamal Mari was the producer and star of the movie, and a fellow martial art competitor. We used to compete together. He was doing what they call South style or Gung Fu, and I studied Okinawan Goju style martial arts. So, we would see each other. Never really compete against each other, but we would see each other at the tournaments and became friends. And he said, "Hey, I'm shooting this movie." So I got a few of my friends together, and we said, "Yeah, we'll do the movie." So we went up there in Canada and shot a lot of the movie in Canada. Then we went to Japan and also to Hong Kong to finish the film. And one of the funniest stories I'll tell you was when I was in Hong Kong, they have, we go to this gala parties, and they have us invite us to a party, and there would bring these girls and like Miss Asia, you know, Miss Asia Pacific, you know, just drop their gorgeous ladies. And, you know, I mean, I don't speak Chinese, so, you know, we're just really there, you know, they were considered our dates, but they were there as, you know, just to get a picture taken, you know.
Yeah.
And I think the Bolo Young was supposed to be in the next movie while we were there, but he became kind of we kind of wrote him in a script. I think it was, you know, he kind of edited him in as a mentor for the hero of the movie, and so. But if you see the movie, it's kind of disjointed. It's a little weird. I played a Hong Kong cop named Ping, and you know, we were like a three quarter of the movie. You know, we were his buddy, the good guys fighting these bad, you know, drug peddlers, and after the big fight scene, we kind of disappear. So everything wasn't, you know, the best part of the movie. And I had an opportunity while I was in Hong Kong to sign a like four movie deal, but I just didn't want to be in Hong Kong that long. And besides, you know, their movies are like, you know, they don't really use a stunt guy.
No, they don't. So you don't want to do a stunt.
I remember on one scene in Canada, they had a bunch of these martial artists, you know, not a regular stuntman. So if you can imagine, you know, with the camera angles and all that, you can make the punch look real, but you have to react to it, right? And they couldn't get these guys to react to the punch. So finally, the second AD, which was the stunt coordinator, comes up to me and says, you know, after about three or four takes, he goes, he's not getting it. Go ahead and kick him in the head. And so I said, really? Yeah, and I broke the poor guy's nose. But it's in the movie. It looks real, because it was.
That's it. Awesome. Well, actually, I work for the New York Asian Film Festival, and sometimes we do some, like, throwback movies. Maybe I might have to... push for Fearless Tiger.
Oh my God! Yeah, I mean, it's not something I'm proud of in the sense that I did it, but movie is amazingly, it's not good. I don't
it's okay,
negative, but it's not good.
It's okay. I think we showed. April we do like an old school Kung Fu Fest.
Yeah.
So we don't show like the blockbusters during then. But I definitely know that the last old school Kung Fu Fest we did, we showed like the American Ninja movies.
Oh yeah, yeah.
What's really funny about this whole thing? Okay, the whole movie is that it's my voice you hear, right?
Mm-hmm.
On the movie, but almost everybody else is voice double, which is amazing because the star's voice is double. I think, and of course, Bolo, and because he doesn't speak any English and. I think Monica spoke for herself, but most of the guys, it's so funny because a lot of the guys, you know, our voice are dubbed. So it's really funny.
Oh, my God.
Jamie Farr was in a movie.
Yes, from MASH. I watched the trailer, like, during the week, and I'm like, Jamie Farr is his...
Oh, yeah, that's really, really extent of my movie days, that it's that actually it's out there. I'm sure I have some movies out there that nothing like Hulk Hogan's.
No.
And the Love Spinch kind of movie, but yeah, I'm sure there's a movie.
No, none of those, thanks.
Oh, God, no.
I tell you what, I mean, you know, I can imagine the doing the days when I used to, Perry Saturn, you know, was one of the good friends that I traveled with, and you know, we became real good friends, that man is absolutely crazy, and so is if you see Ric Flair, Ric Flair is exactly the same as what you see on television.
Not surprised.
Yeah,
at least when I knew him, you know, and that's probably why he hasn't been too lucky with his marriage. But
his 10th marriage.
Perry Saturn, the Kidman, Raven, those guys were. They acted just like they were from ECW. I mean, it was in and out of the ring. They were extremes, I mean, the story that I can't tell on your show, it's true. It happened. It's amazing. Oh, it's amazing. Nobody got arrested.
I could imagine. Oh, I can only imagine.
I'm telling you, it was it was really, you know, I mean, it was a great time. It was a traveling rock and roll show, you know, with a tour bus and going from town to town, and you know, and it was insane.
Oh my God, I bet.
Yeah.
For the little wrestling work that I've done, I was filming with this one group called Beyond Wrestling, and the very short time I was with them,
yeah,
that was insane. So I can only imagine what the professional life was like.
Well, I tell you what, one thing I want to do is, you know, I want to shout out to these guys out in Oakland, mm-hmm, called the Hood Slam.
Oh, yeah.
And they're a very unique wrestling, and their attitude's a little different. But if you're in Oakland, I think they film every, matter of fact, they might have filmed yesterday or today, and they actually videotape a lot of the shows. It is in this small opera house in Oakland, California, that they do an amazing amount of show. There's no gates or anything. I mean, there's no, you know, you can actually literally put your hands on a ring apron, all the fans, and they pack about, you know, 1,000 people in there in a small, wow, arena. But it's one of the most entertaining live pro wrestling shows that you could go see. So if you're in, Upper West Coast, and you're in San Francisco, Oakland area, it's a treat. I mean, I'm sure it's not very expensive to go see, but it is an amazing amount of, you know, pro wrestling you get to see up close and personal. Mm-hmm. I had a ball. I was there, and it's a little bit extreme. I think it's not a place where you take you children there. I think you have to, matter of fact, I don't think they allow any kids. I think you have to be 18 or over. But it is amazing. Hood Slam, I mean, it is, and an amazing amount of talent as well. So if you get a chance, go see it.
Yeah, actually, it was one of our buddies, Chris Dickinson, I think got booked over there maybe about, I think about like a year ago or so. But yeah, we've heard a lot of great things about Hood Slam.
Yeah.
One last question, more of a favor, I guess.
Sure.
I hate to beat a dead horse, but the very last thing before we let you go is, could you please sing a little Purple Rain for us?
Oh, really? I don't know. You know. I mean, I can give you a couple bars.
Good enough for me.
But, you know, it was like, it's really difficult. I mean, it has been probably about, you know, 16, 17 years. So, but, you know, it's you know, like I said, I don't pretend to be a singer. As a matter of fact, you know, one of the things we did was the fact that I was a bad singer. I mean, that's why. So, but you know, well, one of the tidbits that I will give you is that I did work as a bodyguard for Prince and Sheila E.
Oh, she,
on a Purple Rain tour.
Oh, man,
that's the truth. And I did. And one of my job, if you can imagine this, was one of my job was to walk around like a Japanese tour. This is probably a prelude to my character, but I will walk around outside the arena. These guys were selling these knockoff T-shirts. This is true.
Yeah, the bootleg T-shirts.
And I would go out looking like a tourist and go, how much for a T-shirt? How much for a Prince T-shirt? How much? And a guy would, you know, tell me how much, and I would go, okay, how much you have? I buy everything. You give me a discount, I buy everything. And the guy would literally go in his truck and go get like a box or a T-shirt. And then, you know, by that time, he shows up and we take all his inventory. We go, okay, we're the cops. You can't be selling this knockoff. So we take all his T-shirt. That was one of my jobs.
Oh, my God.
So that guy's probably listening right now and probably going, that's what I'm about. But, yeah, so anyway, so, yeah, I did work for a guy named by Jay Bell, another karate guy who got me that gig. I did work for Prince.
For the Purple Rain Tour.
The Purple Rain Tour, absolutely.
Oh, my God.
So here it goes.
All right.
And a little bit. Purple Rain. Yeah, I'm going to leave it at that because I better not go any further because people are actually going to replay that all over. But I give you a little bit, all right? I'm not a singer.
That's good enough.
Sonny, we really appreciate you coming on tonight. We got to get you back on. I'm sure you got some more stories that you can tell on the air.
Oh, yeah, I have a few. I have a lot of Eric Bischoff stories.
Our fans would definitely dig that.
Yeah.
But we want to thank you so much for coming on tonight, taking the time out of your schedule. Good luck with your son and the whole NCAA.
IAWrestle.com.
IAWrestle.com. Go check that out.
Yeah.
Are you doing anything else?
Go ahead. What were you about to say?
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I said, no, check that out for, like I said, you know, easy to remember his name. Kaz Ohno is not named after Kaz Hayashi, by the way, just so you know. My legal name is Kazuo, so I gave him the first part of my name. So that's my son. Hopefully he'll make a run at the NCAA this year. They're called the Knights, and the orange is their color, orange and gray. So you'll be seeing them, and hopefully, you'll have me before or after the NCAA championship in March, and I can give you an update on how he's doing, or you can follow him and IowaWrestle.com.
That's right. And Sonny, you want to plug anything? Are you doing anything other besides that, or?
No, I have my business. You know, I always had a small car dealership that I do, and of course I dabbled in. Still do the international business. I still bring people over to Japan and not necessarily in wrestling, but in other business. So, if people are doing business in Japan and want to know how to conduct themselves in Japan and if you're tired of wasting, spending your time over there, because one of the things that I will tell you, audience, that, the Japanese are very polite people, as you know.
Oh, yeah.
And they will never tell you no. That's why a lot of guys have a hard time dating Japanese girls because, she didn't say no, so she might still be interested. No. No, they're not going to tell you no, and that's how it is in Japanese business as well. They're polite. They'll take you out. They'll entertain you, make you feel like $1 million, but they're not doing business with you, those are the kind of things that you got to learn to read their, ambiguous is the word often used describing, frustration doing business in Japan. So, if somebody's doing business in Japan wants to know a little bit about how to conduct business, feel free to get a hold of me.
Absolutely. What's the best way? Through Facebook?
Yeah, Facebook. I'm in Facebook. I'm the Sonny Ohno, so you can find me. I really appreciate you guys having me, hopefully you have me again.
Absolutely.
Before the wrestling season, I'm talking about collegiate wrestling season,
yeah,
is over. And, anytime I can be a guest or, if you want me to call in when you have Eric Bischoff on, I can assist you on that.
Awesome. Yes. Thank you so much for your help, Sonny. You've been awesome. We'll definitely get you back on soon.
All right. Thanks a lot for having me, guys.
Take
awesome.
Care, Sonny.
Thank you, Sonny. Have a great night.
Good night. I never meant to call you that. Yeah. I'm the one time so you left it.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. How fun was that?
Good stuff, huh?
Yeah.
I hope you guys enjoyed that. Not only did I feed Dave while we're doing that, but I planned my family vacation, did some laundry, and now I'm back. Huh? Put wifey to bed. Now I'm good.
And we're caught in the purple rain before Hurricane Joaquin.
Yeah, I'm hoping it blows out. Apparently, yeah. From what the news is saying, we're just going to get like, just a regular rain, the heavy rains and shit, which we need anyway because we haven't had much rain this last couple of months anyway.
Yeah.
So.
But yeah, the one and only Sonny Ono.
I saw Matty Legend in that. He didn't come in. It's a
dead or alive. You are coming with me.
Normally, I play that for him. But yeah, I'm sorry, Dave. Go ahead.
But yeah, the one and only Sonny Ono, the innovator of the selfie, manager of the best Japanese talent from New Japan, WCW.
He was so insightful. He even threw us some curveballs, you know.
Yeah.
Which is really cool. I didn't know he was a bodyguard for Prince, which is pretty funny as shit.
Didn't know he was roommates with Billy Blanks.
I didn't know how he got the WCW gig. Like, we knew he was friends with Bischoff.
Yeah.
Bischoff really never said how he got the gig. He was in Japan, and Bischoff just said, yeah, Sonny will take care of it. Like, what?
Yeah, because I've heard bits and pieces of the story, but I didn't, and I knew he, in a way, was thrown to the wolves, but I never knew about the meeting.
Yeah.
So that was cool to hear in depth, especially, pissed off Ricky Choshu and Masa Saito.
Yeah. And the endorsement deal that could have been with Fuji. That was pretty funny.
Fuji cameras.
Yeah, man. Well, I'm ready for bed, but we got to do it. We got to do a quick throwback before we get out of here. Because Mr. Ono took up a bunch of our time, so let's do that real quick before we get out of here.
Hey, he can take up our time anytime.
Yeah.
And now, here is your throwback of the week, sponsored by the Shining Wizards Network and Rant EM Radio.
Tonight's throwback, sponsored by TalkBrunch.com. Coming to the Rant, October 7th. 8 o'clock. Be there or be square.
That's coming up.
It's my boys Rick and Mick Wrestling. Those are my boys. They're local kids. Give them some love. Go to TalkBrunch.com. See them on Facebook. They're going to be on the Rant Tuesday night calling in to talk to AA and Tony C and the boys.
All right.
Just to get their feet wet. Not a live show, but you'll get their show every Wednesday night. So
Our old spot.
Oh, wait a minute. Yeah, I forgot about this. Ladies and gentlemen, joining us on the road this evening, man on the street, Maniac Matt Squires. How are you, sir?
What's up, guys?
What's going on?
What's going on, dude?
What a great interview.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Super duper.
Wasn't that great? He was very cool, very insightful.
Very candid.
Yeah, he was, and I thought that he was, I didn't think he was coming on. my luck with the... Our luck with guests, but Dave came through.
Speak for yourself, Phil. When I get a guest, I get the guest.
So now that's your new job, buddy.
Yeah.
That's your second job on the show. Your first job
is
the show.
Is Mega Powers the new booker?
Yeah. Well, all he does is show up anyway, so now you have two jobs. Now, your first job is to show up for the show, and then the second job is to book guests.
All right.
Command Mega Powers.
So what's up, brother?
Nothing. Hey, we're in Denver, home of Nitro.
The Mile High City.
Yes, we are at the Loaf and Jug gas station right there on the corner down the street. And we had we had a big crowd. I think we had about 8 or 9 people out here listening to the Sonny Ono interview.
Oh, good.
So we were giving out Pepe Google Eyes glasses. You have to watch the shows to follow along.
Yeah, you do.
So, also, too, we got the deal. We were giving out Sonny Ono disposable cameras to everyone, but they were bootleg.
They
so.
Were bootleg, yes.
Yeah, we bought them all from Earl Hebner. Yes.
There you go.
And then if you put $40 or more in a tank of gas today, we're going to give you a free Kevin Sullivan grooming kit.
What does that include?
Oh, that includes...
Yes. Watch out for them elderly woman.
That's awesome. I can't wait.
Oh. So, yes. And we'll keep our road report short because Sonny Ono went long. But just like I read in the bathroom stall at this Loaf and Jug, Dave and Phil have the prettiest mouths in podcasting. So,
wow. Denver's got much love for the throwback.
I don't write them. I just read them.
You do, sir. thank you so much, and I hope you'll be checking in with us during our Nitroba.
Yes, Nitrober.
Yeah.
That just, you know, rolls off the tongue off of our pretty mouths.
Yeah, our pretty mouths.
Right off your beautiful lips. Nitrober.
Yeah,
Nitrober.
Yeah. Maybe, that's probably the first and last time I'll say that. All right.
No,
yeah,
we're going to – no, we're using it
– all right.
We're using it the rest of the month. It's Nitrober.
Nitrober.
Thank you, Matt.
Later, guys.
Oh, the man on the street, the road report man himself, Mr. Matt Squires.
Can't wait to get my hands on that Kevin Sullivan grooming kit.
The Pepe goggles, googly eyes. Oh, Jesus Christ. Anyway, all right, Dave, let's get into Nitro, October 2nd, 1995. Like I said, Nitro is about a month old at this point. Still only an hour.
Yeah.
You know?
Which, again, you know, my favorite kind of wrestling format, 1 hour.
Yeah.
As much as I love 2 hours for, I don't know, for like a TV show, like, it just works so perfectly.
The 2 hours works fine if you segue it good.
Yeah.
If you do it like Raw now, you'll probably hang yourself.
Yeah. Nitro, you know, in the past did 3 hours, and everybody, I remember people back then complained about the 3 hours. Like, the first hour is just, you know, all talking, and then, you know, same thing for, I think Thunder went at like 3 hours too, didn't it?
No, a couple of them did. Yeah. But my question to you real quick is this. I used to watch Raw live and then tape Nitro because it was on back at 11 o'clock.
I watched Nitro.
You watched Nitro?
But
okay.
I would flip back and forth, but I would stay with Nitro.
I flip back and forth when it got hot.
Yeah.
You know, but my question to you is, you didn't record any of Raw and
nope.
You never watched Raw?
Nope.
Or you just flipped
I would
through?
Mainly watch Nitro, and occasionally I would flip back to Raw, you know, here and there. But for the most part, I stayed with Nitro, and if you remember, they would rerun Nitro, like, later on that night at, like, I don't know, like midnight or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, 11 o'clock.
And then I would watch it again.
Ah!
So I was a WCW guy.
October 2nd, 1995, from the McNichols Arena. Well, they called it, well, now it's the Pepsi Arena, which is where the Denver Nuggets and the Colorado Avalanche play.
All right.
The Mile High City. One place I'd like to visit, actually. The show opens up with, of course, Bobby Heenan, Eric Bischoff, and Steve Mongo McMichael, and his dog Pepe.
Yes, with the googly eyes.
With the fucking googly eyes.
Googly eye glasses.
Couldn't stand that, man.
I don't know. Like, you know, when I first heard, you know, Steve McMichael as a commentator, it was on Raw, you know, leading up into the Bam Bam Bigelow LT match for WrestleMania 11.
Mm-hmm.
When he came to Nitro, I wasn't bothered by it. The only time I was really bothered by him at first was when he became a wrestler.
He made too many football references during his commentary.
Well, he's a football player.
I understand that, but, like, Dennis Miller did Monday Night Football, and even though Dennis Miller sucked, Dennis Miller didn't make jokes. He just tried to be a funny football commentator.
Yeah.
And I don't think it works with pro wrestling. A lot of pro wrestlers were football players, just, you know.
Well, he also had some, like, really, you know, bad, you know, jokes. Bad Bobby Heenan jokes and stuff like that. That didn't really help his case either.
No, but, no, he's not. And Heenan spot on. So you know Bobby Heenan carried that whole thing.
No, he was also felt like Heenan was like holding back too. And, you know, Heenan also admits, you know, during that time those weren't like the best years of his life in the business. So anyway.
All right. So. Opens up with, as they're talking to tell you what's going on for the rundown, Ric Flair comes out in his garb, right?
Yeah, shows up in the robe right up to the commentating booth.
Grabs Eric Bischoff's headset and starts screaming into it how he's going to kill Arn Anderson.
He told him it's going to be a Mile High night.
That's right.
A Mile High City.
That's right. Let's see where notes are. All right. So they go to commercial, they come back. Well, there's no commercial with the network, but... Which, thank God, I know I have this episode on videotape, but I'll have to go through boxes of videos to find it.
Yeah, thankfully, pretty much everything up until was like the first couple episodes of 98.
Yeah.
So you got all of 95 through 97, and you got some episodes from 98.
Right. First match was a a program that went a while, Lex Luger and the Macho Man.
Yeah, and this all stemmed from, you know, Luger coming in on the first episode of Nitro, challenging Hulk Hogan for the WCW Heavyweight Championship, which I believe they did, like, the next Nitro. But, you know, there was that, you know, paranoia in the air. You know, Luger was Sting's friend, but at the same time, he really wasn't having any allegiances with Hulk Hogan. And, you know, it was kind of like on the fence of whether he was with the Dungeon of Doom or, you know, is he with the good guys? And nobody could really tell. He was the original tweener.
To make matters worse, at one point in the match, Randy Anderson gets knocked out. Savage goes for the elbow.
He's going to pull the trigger.
Right. He's going to pull the trigger and go for the elbow. But, of course, there's nobody to count because the ref's, you know, dead.
Yeah, ref bump.
The ref bump. And who comes out? Fucking Giant. And choke slams the Macho Man. Putting more, I guess, I don't want to call it validity, but to make everybody believe that Lex Luger is now part of the crew.
Yeah.
But he's not. I mean, so, you know, but...
And also, you know, the stipulation for this match was if Lex Luger loses, he leaves WCW.
So Loser Leaves Town match, man. And
I think the stipulation was just for Luger. It wasn't for...
it wasn't for... Yeah, well, that was all Macho Man stipulation. Yeah. He pushed for that.
Yeah.
So that clusterfuck.
So Luger, more or less like deadlifts, Macho Man's, you know... limp body on up for the rack. Referee calls for the bell. Lex Luger wins the match.
Yep.
So your first match of Nitro in Denver, Colorado, you got Lex Luger pulling off the win, and then all of a sudden Disco Inferno's music starts playing as they're about to go to a classic match from their time in ECW. Dean Malenko versus Eddie Guerrero is lined up. Disco Inferno comes out, making a fool out of himself. And we're treated to yet another Malenko Guerrero classic.
Dave and I were talking about the feud that was in ECW that Dave just mentioned briefly. And I know I've spoken about this on the show a bunch of times, and I know our buddy Otto. Happy birthday, by the way, Otto. Otto had a birthday yesterday.
Happy birthday, Otto.
Otto's been with me since day one. So he's an original throwbacker. He gets carte blanche with us. So Otto's a big ECW mark, too. And I always talk about – I was there for – I have to look at my – go back and look at the dates on Wrestle Data, but I was there for the one match they had. I think it was the blow-off. Because they put Eddie on his shoulders, and he was about to leave, and whatever. But either way, I was
Well, everybody knew that they were both going to WCW.
Yeah. I was at one of them, out of the three, and one was in Florida, like Dave said, and two of them were at the arena, so I have to look and find out. Maybe we'll do that whole card. I think that card was dope anyway.
Oh, it's just a feud.
Yeah, we could do the whole feud, too.
Yeah.
I think there's a DVD...
on RF video.
On RF.
The whole feud. Yeah.
The whole feud. And I just got the Best of the Eliminators from RF, too. I'm very happy about that. So he does put out some good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it's cheap. It's like 10 or 15 bucks at the shows. So.
Oh, yeah. So anyway, Guerrero, you know, gets this match lined up from beating Jushin Thunder Liger on main event. Hits him with a brainbuster into the frog splash and earns his right to face Dean Malenko on Monday Nitro.
Mm-hmm.
For this episode, and again, these guys do not, you know, skip a beat from their ECW days, which was not too long before this episode of Nitro. Just a lot of great, you know, exchanges. Like, these guys were just so fluid. Like,
yeah,
it was almost like a dance in the ring between these guys.
Mm-hmm.
My only gripe about this match was they randomly go to Hulk Hogan.
Who
pulls up in a limo.
I'm like, there's the limo. Me and Dave are watching while we're playing the Sonny Ono interview back, right? I come back in the room and we have Nitro on the network on mute. I go, look, Dave, there's a limo. Dave's like, it's Nitro, Phil. There's always a limo.
Yeah, there's always a limo pulling up. Like, there's no reason for the limo to be there and
right.
Still pulling up.
So Hogan pulls up with the neck brace. Jimmy Hart's out there to greet him. Jimmy Hart had some fresh airbrush jackets, man. I love Jimmy Hart's gear. Always did.
Oh, yeah.
Love Jimmy Hart's gear.
It didn't matter who he was managing. They were always being represented properly on those jackets.
Right. Yeah. Fun stuff. Fun stuff.
I got to know who his airbrusher is.
No, I think he mentioned it on Legends House. I have to go back. I think he did mention it, though.
Yeah.
Someone, he mentioned it on Legends House or one of those interviews he did.
It's like him. RVD had some sweet airbrush.
Yep.
Trying to think
of Ultimate Warrior had some great airbrush.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
We'll have to do an all airbrush episode.
Listen, if we could do a whole fucking episode on Virgil, we could do an episode about airbrush.
Do a round table discussion on who had the best airbrush
tights. Who had the best gear, ring gear. Hey, listen, ring gear is important.
Yeah.
Ring gear is very important to a character.
It defines, you know, it's a major contribution to what defines that character.
Absolutely.
So anyway, you know, Hulk Hogan interrupts this amazing match. Some great spots in this, you know, Guerrero does like a crossbody off the top rope onto the concrete to Dean Malenko. Amazing stuff. And, you know, plus these guys have like a lot more, you know, space when they're in the arena as opposed to, you know, an ECW, you know, bingo hall, which I, you know, both of us have been there.
Yeah.
If you watch, you know, a lot of ECW shows on the network or wherever, it looks like a bigger space than it is, but when
it's
you're
not
actually there, it's really tiny.
Yeah.
And when they talk about how hot it gets in the summer,
it gets ridiculously hot.
Yes.
We'll do some ECW, maybe like a November to remember next month. We're working on our programming from November, but I definitely want to do a November to remember. Even in the winter time, it wasn't as cold in the winter, but it was definitely extremely hot in the summertime.
Yeah.
No ventilation. This is before the renovation, kids. You go there now, it's probably air conditioning and shit like that. But
they have had like 5 or 10 different orders since.
Yeah, pretty much.
So back to the match. Guerrero goes for the frog splash. Malenko lifts up the knees. And, you know, they're just, what's it? You know, Malenko tries to go, you know, underneath his legs to pull out Guerrero. You know, their hands are locked. Guerrero flips him over and, you know, catches him in a cradle pin. 1, 2, 3. And, you know, one of the things that I really liked about Dean Malenko and Eddie Guerrero on WCW Nitro, because a lot of, you know, how can I word it? You know, nowadays, if the same guys fight each other over and over again, everybody moans and groans about it.
Well, yeah, like, it's not Randy Orton and Sheamus. It's...
No.
You know why? Because both guys can work.
Not only could they work, but they would have a different match.
Right.
Every time that they face each
other.
But
I guarantee you, if Randy Orton, I'm sorry, I'm not saying Sheamus is terrible, but if Sheamus was on the same level as Randy Orton and told a compelling story,
it'd be a whole different story.
It'd be a whole different story, and you wouldn't have the same match. And that's a great point. Eddie Guerrero, Dean Malenko did a different ending all the time, and it was fluent and compelling.
Yeah. Plus, a lot of those guys, you know, wrestled in Japan and, you know,
each other.
They wrestled each other plenty of times in Japan, too, you know, and, you know, I feel it's more, you know, nurtured as an art form over there and, you know, especially with, you know, WCW, you know, being from, I guess, like a, you know, southern kind of background, I guess you could say, you know, especially with the NWA roots. You know, a lot of those guys had to wrestle different matches too, and it wasn't, you know, the same thing over and over again. And, you know, it was really cool to, you know, when I was originally watching these matches, you know, I was, you know, marking out because, you know, I'd seen them go in ECW, and now to see them on like a bigger scale for WCW Nitro and to see it more often was amazing. You know, I had to, you know, for ECW, you were lucky if you got the match, you know, on local access.
Yeah.
But you knew that there were more matches and they weren't always showing the full matches. So, you know, you had to, you know, buy the VHS from RF Video or wherever. And, you know, it's just fantastic just seeing these guys go and really, you know, strutting their stuff because, you know, also Eddie Guerrero, Dean Malenko, you know, the other matches on this card aren't guys like them. It's first matches, you know, Luger, Macho Man. We have Flair versus Arn Anderson. You know, major names, and these guys are just being thrown into that same hour with those guys. You know, that's a big deal.
It wasn't really structured until they had the two-hour format, and you know how that went with the cruiserweights. And actually, Sonny Ono spoke about that in the interview. That second hour was important to the product. And I think
that's when Raw would start.
Right. It would. Not only that's when Raw would start, but it also set them apart from Raw and everything else with that style.
Yeah.
So, all right.
And also when, you know, real quick, you know, we, you know, also brought up the Joshi wrestlers in WCW. And, you know, they really, you know, made their mark in WCW. Whenever WWE tried to, you know, copy that kind of stuff, you know, for their own product, whether they're bringing in their own luchadors, you know, they would bring in Mil Mascaras, you know, as old as he was, you know, he could still go. They would bring in, you know, Octagon and all them. And it just wasn't the same.
No, it wasn't.
Even bringing in Great Sasuke wasn't the same.
Nah. I think, honestly, though, I feel like, you know, WCW did their due diligence when it came to stuff like that. I don't know.
Yeah, it felt like it was, you know, it wasn't filler. You know, I think for WWF, it was more filler. For WCW, it was actually like a highlighted part of the show.
Yeah.
Something that everybody was looking forward to.
All right.
So Hulk Hogan has his interview with Mean Gene.
Yeah.
In the ring. And, you know, what can I say? He cuts a Hulk Hogan, you know, promo for the sumo truck monster truck match coming up for Halloween Havoc. His match in, you know, it was like a double main event. He had the sumo monster truck match. He had the match with the giant. You know, Hogan's, you know, doing the Hogan thing. Makes his way out of the interview space in the ring. And is attacked by supposedly an elderly
woman. Yeah, an elderly lady at ringside just randomly attacks the Hulkster.
The stunt granny.
The stunt granny. Yeah. Stunt granny comes in, starts beating him with a cane, with a old lady shoes. Of course, it's not an old lady. But the little old lady still has the gear on. And as this lady's kicking the hell out of Hulk Hogan, here comes the giant, and next to the Ding Dong is the worst character WCW has ever had, which is the Zodiac.
Yes. No.
No. Yes. No. No. Awful. Awful. As they enter the ring, more of the old lady's clothing comes off, and it turns out, obviously, it is the Taskmaster himself, Mr. Kevin Sullivan.
Yes.
And now they all kick the shit out of Hulk Hogan.
And, you know, Giant once again snaps the neck of Hulk Hogan, which put him in the neck brace.
Yep.
And to add insult to injury, to put salt in those wounds, Kevin Sullivan shaves off. Such blasphemy right here. Shaves off the
handlebar mustache.
The Montana that Hulk Hogan has proudly wore for so many years.
Yep.
And gives him a Hitler mustache.
And I was telling Dave, he should have kept that. He should have kept that little, you know, Hitler mustache going on.
It works for Michael Jordan.
Anything worked for Michael Jordan, though.
Of course.
If you think about it. Let's be honest. But that was, honestly, seeing that again was pretty cool. That I enjoyed. That's old school booking right there.
Well, you know, at the same time, you know, nobody ever messed with Hulk Hogan's, you know, appearance. And, you know, do something like that, that was, you know, for me at that time, you know, as a kid, I was like,
when am I going to get facial hair? No.
Besides that, it's like they shaved off Hulk Hogan's mustache.
Dude,
nobody's ever done that.
But as a 20-year-old, I was like, holy shit, yeah. Kevin Sullivan just shaved Hulk Hogan's mustache.
Yeah,
and we were all like, doesn't matter how old you are, that's legendary, that handlebar mustache, you know?
And that was like another thing is like, oh, what does he look like without the mustache?
He looks old. He looks like a old, balding fucking bodybuilder.
Yeah. So the American males try to stop things.
Yeah, Scotty Riggs comes in first. Thank you for driving through. Gets chokeslammed for his troubles. Here comes his tag team partner, Captain Vest.
Marcus Alexander Bagwell.
He gets jacked. So, of course, Hogan's buddies now come in, the Nasty Boys. And to Knobs' credit, he had 30 seconds of a good exchange until Giant jacked him. And then, of course, while Giant was jacking him, Jerry Sags comes in and goes to work on the Zodiac.
Weak link.
Yeah, waiting for his spot to get jacked, because now he has to wait because he ran into the ring too quick.
Yep.
You know, he was supposed to wait until Knobs got banged up, but of course he didn't. So now he has to go play with Beefcake in the corner.
Yeah.
And gets jacked for his troubles.
Chokeslam party.
That's it. You know, in 2014, in 15.
Excuse me.
Sorry, I'm exhausted. You have the Super Kick Party last year and this year with the Young Bucks. And now, in 95, you had the Chokeslam Party.
You're damn right.
With the Big Show.
Well, that's the thing. Like, you know, Chokeslam's ever been around, but, you know, he really, really put the Chokeslam on the map.
He was green. Like, he was really, he's only been in the business about a year, maybe?
Yeah.
At that point?
He was like, he was another Hogan find.
Yeah.
Hogan was just like, hey, you know, this guy's huge. You should be a wrestler.
Let's make him Andre's son.
I need to body slam you at some point.
It's important to my persona that I body slam you and make you, you know, a pawn in my big game.
Yeah.
Little did they know that he'd be a huge pawn in about another year from now.
Hey, man, you know, for a rookie, it was the first year going in, choke slams Ric Flair and gets a world title win off of him. So, yeah.
Yeah. They gave him the keys of the kingdom. And I don't dislike Paul White. I know I was shit-talking him on the Wizards on the other night, but it's time to go.
Yeah.
It's time to go. Just putting that out there. All right. And that's pretty much it.
I got the main event.
And the main event.
The match that a lot of people never thought they would see. And this was the second match in the series leading up to the final one, which was going to be the following Nitro, which we're going to cover next week.
Was Flair and Double A.
Cousin versus cousin.
Cousin. And I'm cousins with the Andersons. We're family. You remember that promo?
Yeah. Arn versus Rick.
Yeah. Next week I'll probably have clips. Guys, it's been a really rough couple of weeks. And I apologize, but I'll try to make clips for next episode. But
I've been up since around 4:30.
So have I.
So there you go.
So have I. And I didn't even go to work today, but I've been up since 4:30. Anyway,
Arn versus Flair. First match was already at Fall Brawl 96. '95. So, you know, for guys that, you know, didn't get to face each other, I wanted to say, like, didn't face each other in their prime, but these guys were still fantastic at this point. You know, obviously, and Ric Flair, you know, went on to go back to WWE and do some amazing matches over there. But one of the things that I find really remarkable about, you know, this exchange was how fluid these guys were with one another. Granted, I don't know if they've ever had a match, you know, with one another. All I know is that they've teamed with one another, they've ridden on the roads together. But this match was just, you know, for their style, they were very fast paced. They figured out creative ways to kind of, you know, pull their typical routines, their chops and stuff like that, without, you know, really, you know, going through the motions. You know, a lot of this stuff was coming out of left field, and you know, was it, you know, Flair goes for the you know, the Flair flip over the top rope when he's whipped into the corner. Arn charges at him,
but then Rick pulls the rope.
Yeah, he
down.
Pulls the ropes. Normally the shtick is you know, Flair gets clotheslined.
No, not tonight.
Not tonight. You know, this time Arn Anderson's flying over the top rope. Was it Arn Anderson hits Ric Flair with a spine buster just seamlessly?
Well, yeah, that's his thing, and I, you know what, the fluent movement, and I don't know. To be honest with you, I don't know if they if they talked a whole hell of a lot, they probably went out there and winged it because they've been together for so long as partners. I think it's
In general, it's, like from what we hear, these guys just winging it in the ring.
And they roll together. That's how they got down. School. You know, it's old school. Absolutely.
Yeah, you know, Flair, taking a backdrop not on the concrete floor, but on the mat.
Yeah,
on the floor. Which is very, uncharacteristic of Ric Flair to take a bump like that on the floor. Arn Anderson going for the DDT. Ric Flair grabs a hold of the top rope, blocks the DDT. Just a lot of great, back and forth chemistry between, two guys, again, who didn't really have like a prior in-ring battles with one another.
Yeah.
Ric Flair hits the figure four in the middle of the ring. The loose cannon. Brian Pillman hits the scene.
Yep, with the off top rope with a knee.
Yeah, and he's the figurehead in the temporary split between Arn Anderson and Ric Flair at this time.
Yep.
We'll go more into depth about that. And
got four more episodes.
Yeah, and Pillman pulls the trigger and jumps off the top rope, splashes Ric Flair. Referee calls for the bell. Pillman and Arn Anderson just go to town on Ric Flair and like gangbusters.
Yeah, and what was really amazing was the fact that they pulled it off so well, him and Anderson and Flair.
Mm-hmm.
Pillman was just a perfect fit for all that.
Yeah, and he was, fresh, flesh, as they say, for the Horsemen, like a great new perspective.
Yep.
For this group, obviously you're not going to have your Tully Blanchards, you're not going to have your Barry Ole Windhams. Andersons, you're not going to have your Barry Windhams.
You're not.
And, with the, granted Pillman's been around in, WCW for some time, and it was feuding with Anderson and Flair. With the Hollywood Blondes gimmick with Steve Austin.
Yeah, they had a couple title matches with them.
So this was kind of really like a 180 that, now Pillman is being involved with Anderson, and then soon enough would, actually join the Horsemen.
Yeah.
So it was a really strange and interesting dynamic, and it really fit well with where WCW was going, where, Monday Nitro, was headed into, revolutionized pro wrestling at that time and just change, the pace of the pace of the sport.
Yep.
To something more fast paced, something more, youthful, as they say. And, it was just a really awesome episode. And, just before they're, calling it a day, President Nick Bockwinkel issues for the next episode of Nitro a rematch between Arn Anderson and Ric Flair. In a steel cage.
In a cage. Let me ask you something. If Pillman didn't come in, does Anderson tap?
Oh, man. I'd have to say yeah.
Yeah. I'm green. I think he would have tapped.
They're cousins.
We're cousins. Olean and Ricky.
Yeah, I totally see him tapping.
Yeah.
Well, hey, Flair did the honors for Anderson, so.
You know what? I don't. People talk a lot of shit about Ric Flair not putting guys over. He fucking did it all the time, dude.
All the time.
Like, stop. He made superstars out of some of these guys.
Hulk Hogan's first year in WCW was beating Ric Flair every other match.
Yeah, yeah. What about Flair years later? He's IC title holder.
Yeah.
Evolution, him and Batista were tag champions or whatever it was.
Yeah, not long before he left, he did the honors for Ken Doan, Kenny from Spirit Squad.
Spirit Squad, yeah.
I think he lost. I think he let Ken Doan, pin him twice.
Shawn Michaels beat him, Triple H, whatever, man.
Everyone.
Undertaker, listen, it is what it is. Ric Flair is the number one wrestler, was the number one wrestler for me ever on the planet. A lot of guys are a close second, but Ric Flair was the man, and he fucking does a wonderful job on this edition of Monday Night Raw.
Nitro.
Oh, yeah. I'm so fucking tired. I just mentioned Raw and him in the IC title. I apologize. We have a whole month of Nitro lined up for you guys. A whole month.
And Halloween Havoc 95.
And Halloween Havoc 95 at the end of the month. So
the Sumo Monster Truck
The Sumo
match.
Monster Truck match from the Joe Louis Arena.
Yeah.
So Nitrober is in effect.
Nitrober.
What do you think? Corny, right?
I love it.
You love it?
Yeah.
I was hoping you would.
It can't get any better than
this. You ready to wrap this bitch up?
Yeah. You know, like to thank Sonny Ono for coming on the show today.
Yeah. Everybody in the chat room.
Like for everyone in the chat room coming on, Ted Turner was in the room. Perfect.
Yeah.
And actually tomorrow night I'm going to be hitting up Resurrection of Jake the Snake Roberts over in 42nd Street in Manhattan. And Jake the Snake, DDP, and Scott Hall is going to be there. So you'll get a full film review next week.
Oh, it's perfect.
Yeah.
So next episode of Nitro.
This is WCW month. This is Nitrober.
This is Nitrober. Don't forget, guys, Talk Brunch this week on The Rant. Tomorrow night, Wrestling Call-In Show. Sunday, What Are You Reading? Comic Book Show with Jordan Surfer. Shining Wizards' new episode is out. Midnight Jury's doing a best of this week. Go check that out. I think it's Fast Times at Ridgemont High. Good stuff.
Phoebe Cates.
Yeah, Phoebe Cates and the titties. Guys, TurnbuckleThrowbacks.com, RantIanRadio.com, ShiningWizardsNetwork.com, Geek Life Radio tomorrow night, 8 o'clock. 9 o'clock, 8 o'clock Central Time. Twitter, at TBuckleTBacks with Periscope. Gmail, TurnbuckleThrowbacks1@gmail.com. Facebook, we're everywhere, guys. Go check it out. Leave a review on iTunes. Take care of yourselves, each other. Of course, avoid the clout. Don't get arrested. Stay dry if you're over here in the Northeast. Be kind to animals. Hug your mom. And watch a lot of Monday Nitro.
Hey, it's all over WWE Network. We're not getting paid for this. It's just that damn good.
Go check it out, guys. Say goodnight, Gracie.
Goodnight, Gracie.